I wondered what you were planning today.
I was interested in that conversation with Rob because I must be honest, I have over the last couple of days, even though I know people won't be allowed to comment and I understand why they won't, I've gone to see if people have because I can't believe that anyone is prepared to defend you know who. But up until relatively recently, there were some readers of the Times who kept saying, "Oh, I don't know. I think he's being made a scapegoat potentially." But those people, I think they've all gone away. We can't actually read their comments anymore, rightly. But I'm pretty sure they're not quite as voluble as they once were.
I mean, these issues are very, very difficult because yeah, obviously there's an issue the government's got about whether it issues. Whether it releases emails between the government and the prosecuting between the government and other people in it,
sure.
And the prosecuting authorities and the police aren't sure they should. Anyway, I look forward to your show. And thank you to you listeners for your company this afternoon. My producer was Lizzie Highfield and Ryan Boyden was pressing the buttons. And Jane Garvey, as you can tell, is here next on Times Radio.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Good afternoon, it is 2 o'clock. This is Jane Garvey on Times Radio until 4. And on the programme today, we'll have an assessment of PMQs. Kemi Badenoch has once again been pressing Sir Keir Starmer, this time on the issue of student loans. We'll hear the voice of a survivor of Jeffrey Epstein. She talks very movingly about the impact on her and indeed her family. We'll speak to the best-selling novelist, Ellie Griffiths. And we're going to ask, is the warm spring weather here to stay? No, of course it isn't, but we can still ask the question. Here's the news at 2, James Kitchen.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. It's emerged that Peter Mandelson was arrested by police after the Commons Speaker warned detectives the former cabinet minister was potentially planning to flee the country. Addressing MPs, Sir Lindsay Hoyle said he felt duty-bound to share what he'd been told during a visit to the British Virgin Islands.
I'd like to confirm that upon receipt of information that I felt it was relevant, I passed this on to the Metropolitan Police in good faith, as is my duty and responsibility.
Officers arrested Lord Mandelson hours later on Monday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. The former British ambassador to Washington has called claims he would leave the country baseless. Reform UK's candidate in tomorrow's Gorton and Denton by-election won't be fined for breaching rules on campaigning material. A leaflet failed to include the name and address of the person promoting Matt Goodwin's campaign as required by law. But a High Court judge says he's satisfied it was an accidental error. The Manchester Evening News reporter Helena Vesti says the PM's decision to block the Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham from standing for Labour might come back to bite him.
We have heard from voters that they think Andy Burnham would have walked it for Labour, whereas now Labour find themselves in a more precarious position. We've also heard a lot of people hitting out at Keir Starmer's Labour, so there seems to be a distinction between what Andy Burnham would have provided from Labour versus what they now see as Keir Starmer's choice for the seat, and they don't necessarily like that.
A full list of candidates can be found at whocanivotefor.co.uk. Energy bills are to drop by £10 a month for the average household from April. The regulator Ofgem says the 7% fall in the price cap follows the government scrapping an energy efficiency scheme at the last budget. The Conservatives claim the drop's been achieved by sleight of hand, shifting green levies onto tax. Sir Keir Starmer and the Tory leader Kemi Badenoch clashed over the issue at Prime Minister's Questions.
Driven by the action that this Labour government has taken, we promised to cut the cost of living. We are cutting the cost of living.
Yeah. For the record, energy bills are still higher than when he came into office. Yeah.
For the first time in more than 2 weeks, migrants have arrived in the UK after crossing the English Channel. Pictures from the PA news agency show people stepping off a Border Force vessel in Ramsgate in Kent earlier. So far this month, 597 migrants have made the journey across the stretch of water. Stephen Hawking has been pictured in the Epstein files relaxing on a sun lounger with two women in bikinis said to be his carers. A photo of the late British scientist has circulated online after it was featured in the latest tranche of documents released by the US Department of Justice. His family says the photo was taken during a 2006 conference at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel on the Caribbean island of St. Thomas, where Hawking gave a speech on quantum cosmology. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker. Afternoons on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Good afternoon, just after two. This is Jane Garvey. I'm here on Times Radio until 4 o'clock. I'd love your company. The WhatsApp is 0333 003 2353. Actually, a little bit of breaking news. The BBC is reporting that a government minister says the UK is going to pause the Chagos Islands deal. We'll try and find more out about that. Pretty interesting if that is indeed the case, but that's being reported at the moment. On the programme today, the former Chief of Staff to Nicola Sturgeon, Liz Lloyd, will assess today's edition of PMQs. And importantly, a little bit later, we're going to hear from an Epstein survivor who talks about the impact not just on her, but on her wider family.
My son called me a few days after the Epstein files were released, but he called and said, "Mom, are you okay?" I was like, "What do you mean? Like, what do you mean I'm okay? Like, are you okay? Like, what's going on?" He goes, "Mom, I just read the news. I heard the files were released. Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think I'm okay." And then he just burst into tears and said, "Mom, I'm so sorry this happened to you." And he goes, "I don't want to hear the details. You know, I don't want to know what they did to you, these horrible people. You know, I just want to make sure that, Mom, you're okay." And I was like, I'm fine. But that, to me, hurt more than anything else that I've ever gone through, is to have him, like, listen to my son sobbing on the other end of this phone call.
Well, that woman's name is Rena, and you can hear more from her a little bit later. We're talking sport with Vassos Alexander, Snoop Dogg and Swansea. He's going to attempt to explain the latest showbiz football mashup. Scott Bryan, the country's leading television critic, will be here to assess ITV's The Lady, and the Dyers, Danny and Danny, taking over a caravan park on Sky. Why? And the big guest after 3:30 is Ellie Griffiths. Her latest novel is already a bestseller, and if you believe in time travel, or even if you don't, Detective Ali Dawson will entertain you as she journeys back to the London of 1851 and visits the Great Exhibition. And it's all because her cat's gone missing. Honestly, it's a great book. You'll enjoy Ellie Griffiths' company after 3:30 today. I think actually we can go straight to the Times policy editor, Oliver Wright, to talk about the Chagos Islands. Oliver, what are you hearing?
Hello. Well, I mean, the Chagos Islands deal is in some trouble. And the reason why it's in some trouble is because of a telephone conversation which happened between Donald Trump and Keir Starmer last week, at which Trump asked for permission to use British bases, both in the UK and the Chagos Islands, the Diego Garcia base, as part of any putative action against Iran. Now, during that call, Starmer said that he could not give that permission because under international law, as far as the UK sees it, striking another sovereign nation would be illegal without a UN mandate. Now, clearly, that didn't go down well with the Americans, and it was after that that Trump put out his statement basically criticising the Chagos deal again, which has been sort of on and off, as listeners will remember.
He had at one point backed it, hadn't he?
He had backed it. He initially backed it, then he came out against it during the row over Greenland. Then UK diplomats were able to sort of put it back together again. And then, you know, the latest thing is he's now come out against it again. So this pause really is to allow, you know, the diplomatic process to continue for the UK to try again to persuade the Trump administration that the Chagos Island deal needs to be done. But I think this time around there is, yeah, quite a bit of pessimism in Whitehall. They feel that, you know, really the Americans are just sort of, their heart's not in it. And without the Americans, it's really hard to see how the deal gets done.
Okay, just briefly remind people of the government's case for the deal.
Government's case for the deal is essentially that A court ruling has previously found that the UK sovereignty of the islands is not valid. They are concerned that, you know, if that ruling goes through the court system and becomes binding, because it isn't binding at the moment, then effectively we would not legally have the right to the Chagos Islands. And the plan behind this deal was to make an agreement with Mauritius by which we would have rights to Diego Garcia while effectively giving back the rest of the Chagos Islands to Mauritius.
So we'd still be able to make strategic use of Diego Garcia. Yeah,
exactly, for 100 years, right, in return for a payment of around 32...
million? Have we lost him? I know it was a lot of money.
£32 billion?
Yes, £32 billion. Yes, you're back. Thank God. I filled in, but I wasn't certain. It is £32 billion. Right, okay. Yes. Yeah. And if this doesn't go ahead, or if it's paused, will this go down as another Labour government U-turn?
Yeah, I think it will. And it will certainly, you know, delight the Conservatives and Reform, both of whom have been campaigning on this. I think, yeah, there is a hope in the government that, you know, having changed his mind several times before, Trump might change his mind again and the deal might be back on. But I don't think there is, you know, any certainty at this stage. And I would say that, you know, the sort of optimism levels are quite low in Whitehall on that.
Oliver Wright, thank you very much. So that's the very latest news just coming our way and your way in the last couple of minutes. It's Times Radio. It's almost 10 past two. Now, briefly to the most read stories on the Times website this afternoon. At number three, Trump gives the longest State of the Union ever. These people are crazy. This is the US president sparring with heckling Democrats in a speech on the economy, immigration and Iran. The second most read story is Commons Speaker reported Mandelson as flight risk to Met Police. Sir Lindsay Hoyle was the source that led officers to arrest the peer over claims he was about to head to the British Virgin Islands. And the most read piece on the Times website today at the moment is Stephen Hawking pictured in Epstein files. The released documents shed light on Epstein's attempts to cultivate the academic elite, including the British physicist who went to a conference funded by the financier. You can read all of these articles on thetimes.com. You will need your digital subscription, and if you don't have one, you can get one. Go to thetimes.com/subscribe. And if you'd like a sneaky look at what's coming up in tomorrow's Times paper, even before it's gone to press, you can listen to Kate Borsay on Evening Edition as she brings you tomorrow's Times Today. That is every evening just before 9 o'clock. Kate gets to go through the best bits of tomorrow's paper with one of the Times' senior editors. Right, we'll move on to PMQs. We will, I should say, later in the programme, be hearing from an Epstein survivor. We must never forget that they are the people very much at the heart of the story, and they're the people who are really suffering. And as that interviewee you'll hear later illustrates, their families carry a burden as well. So to PMQs, Keir Starmer under pressure to reduce the burden on graduates after the Tories use PMQs to push the issue. Here is Kemi Badenoch's first question to the Prime Minister.
Before the Prime Minister and I became MPs, parties of every colour increased the cost of going to university. The system is now at breaking point for graduates. I believe the student loans have become a debt trap. It is time for all of us to do something about it. Will he cut interest rates on student loans?
Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I have to say I'm glad to learn that the Leader of the Opposition has finally admitted that they scammed the country on this. And that applies to everything they did in government. We inherited their broken student loans system. We've already introduced maintenance grants to improve the situation, which they scrapped. And we will look at ways to make it fairer. And we will do other things within the economy to help students. What other things they say? The news this morning, Mr. Speaker, 7 a.m, energy bills coming down by £117. For millions of families and young people struggling, that's guaranteed money off bills in April, driven by the action that this Labour government has taken.
That's the Prime Minister and Kemi Badenoch at PMQs today. I should say the Times is playing a part here. It's advocating reform of the student loan system under its End the Graduate Rip-Off campaign. Let's bring in our guest for PMQs this week. It's Liz Lloyd, Chief of Staff at one point to Nicola Sturgeon when she was the First Minister of Scotland, and now a specialist partner at the advisory company Flint Global. Hello, Liz. What did you make of it all today?
Afternoon, Jane. I think that was quite a good subject for Kemi to go on today. There is definitely room to push the argument on the student loans issue, and Keir Starmer seemed pretty weak in response. I think they both had kind of very scripted positions today of she would push for action on student loans and he would talk about energy bills no matter what they said, because he didn't have an answer really on the student loans point. But I think she did quite well to pick on that subject, certainly for the first couple of questions. And you know, there's a group of, I suppose, what would traditionally be aspirational Labour graduate voters who are pretty unhappy with the Labour Party at the moment, and she seems to want them to look at the Tories.
I guess this is a good opportunity for you to tell us what happens in Scotland in terms of a uni education. Is it all free for everybody?
For Scottish students, the tuition fees are free. But you do still, you know, a lot of students will still require student loan support in order to, like, pay for their housing and their debts and stuff like that. Like the cost of living part, basically. So, yeah, your tuition is free, but there is some support for students to kind of have income support, if you like. But most students will end up using student loans.
Now, for various logistical reasons that no one's going to be interested in, I couldn't hear the whole of PMQs today, but I did hear the first half. It wasn't actually the fieriest series of encounters between Ms. Badenoch and Sir Keir. What did you think?
I thought she had a good subject, but after the first couple of questions, she didn't really seem to have anywhere to go with it, and it became quite weak. She tried to bring in the Labour scandals, but I don't think she did that very effectively. He had turned up with, you know, I'm going to talk about energy bills reducing, I'm going to talk about inflation going down. And because he didn't engage at all with the subject, possibly quite effectively for Keir Starmer, he kind of took the sort of sting in the moment, if you like, out of her questions, because he was largely just ignoring her questions.
Yeah. But what do you make of that? You're someone who's advised someone who had to take part in events like this. Yeah. Is it reasonable to simply ignore the question and plough on with the message you intend to impart?
Reasonable is a difficult judgment. Is it something that is done? Yeah, absolutely. It's a tactic, 100%, that you know, you've got things you want to get across. No matter what anybody asks you, that's what you're going to go for. Where I think this failed a bit for Starmer today is that there are people very angry about this student loans issue, and there are people looking for an answer. And some of those people are Labour voters.
Yeah.
And you would have watched that, and it was clear that, you know, maybe they're thinking about this in the background, they're briefing, that they're going to look at the student loan system. But you would have come away feeling that he didn't really care about the situation that a lot of graduates are in, feeling this pressure and about the impact it's having, you know, on their ability to buy houses, for example, or to get on in life, to start families, that kind of, to manage the cost of living.
Yeah, I mean, when you actually just look at it, I mean, graduates are now saying that they owe more than they originally borrowed. Yeah. I mean, that is, if you're in your 20s or early 30s, that's quite something, isn't it? How do you plan the rest of your life around that?
I think there has a real unfairness been created. And obviously, you know, students knew when they went to university and they took out these loans that they would have to pay them back. But I think the sore point is that the terms and conditions appear to have been changed on them over the years. So, you know, the grounds on which you took out the loan is no longer the grounds on which you're paying it back. And it does have the potential to impact people's ability to get on in life. And actually, you know, you talk about the state of the economy, that's something Labour are supposed to be very big on. If people can't buy houses because their student loan is impacting their ability to save a deposit, if they're not starting families, if they're not starting businesses, you know, that's one of the reasons people criticise sometimes the Scottish government for making tuition free. But actually lowering the amount of debt people have does allow them to be more active in the economy later in life.
Well, actually, just thinking about that, has that led to a birth rate in Scotland that's not as not decreasing as much as the birth rate in the rest of the country?
Off the top of my head, I could not tell you, to be honest.
Because in the end, that's really important, isn't it? If we haven't got future taxpayers, we are stuffed.
Yeah, and I think what it has done is helped keep some of Scotland's younger population in Scotland, if you like.
We
don't have enough young people, and giving them reasons not to leave is quite important.
Let's move on to Sir Ed Davey of the Lib Dems. He raised the ongoing investigation into Jeffrey Epstein's links to the UK.
The former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, has raised deeply shocking concerns that Jeffrey Epstein may have used British airports and even RAF bases to traffic young women and girls in and out of our country. This is appalling. The Prime Minister knows that I agree with Gordon Brown that there needs to be a full public inquiry into all this. If he doesn't agree with Gordon Brown, will he, at the very least, commit to releasing the flight logs and related documents? Will he wait for the House to force the government to do that?
So Ed Davey raising such an important point. This stuff is, frankly, utterly dismal, isn't it, Liz?
It is. And I think it was good to see Ed Davey raise it today. Somebody had to raise that. If we had gone all the way through the session of PMQs today with nobody raising issues around Epstein and around Andrew, it would have looked like parliamentarians weren't doing their job, to be honest. It is going to be difficult for the government with police inquiries on to publish things. But I think, you know, Ed Davey is making the right points. The flight logs, if RAF bases have been used, you know, that does have to come out into the open at some point. And as you said before, you know, you played that clip from an Epstein survivor at the beginning. You know, we have to not lose the focus in this on the women and girls in particular who were the victims here, whatever the circumstances, whether it's Epstein or Andrew, not making allegations where there's police inquiries ongoing. But we have to not lose the focus on them because we could become consumed by the sort of the Mandelson parts of this and the political parts of this. But we have to remember that there are women and girls at the heart of this who have suffered.
It's also worth saying, of course, there have been restrictions on the ability of parliamentarians in London, down at Westminster, to be able to talk about the royal family. Are there any restrictions operating in the Scottish Parliament? I assume not.
Do you know, those issues have never, in my time, didn't really come up. I actually think similar, not quite the same restrictions, but a sort of similar kind of way of operating would have applied. It has always surprised me that people were unwilling to break those restrictions in Westminster and just to say what they thought and take the chance. You know, to see an MP potentially be thrown out for actually that criticism would have been quite a strong way to challenge the royal family's prerogative and the sort of silence that was going on around these issues. Why is that being brought up in Holyrood by any party, to be honest, in terms of, you know, royal family conduct? It comes up on other issues, but not, you know, I can't think of any occasions off the top of my head of a big assault on, you know, the conduct of Andrew. There is a sort of respect, if you like, which I think is still there in Westminster as well for, you know, we have to be careful what we say. They are the royals. I think it's probably time for parliamentarians in all places to drop a bit of that and start to look more closely at, you know, issues around the finances, the houses, the royal family, and bring some transparency onto a range of issues, not just this one around Epstein.
Let's talk about Peter Mandelson's arrest. Lord Mandelson, he has now been released on bail, but the police were apparently told he might leave the country. He's denied that very forcefully, we should say. The Times revealed that tip-off came from the Speaker of the House, and here he is explaining it all at PMQ, or just before PMQs today. Here's Lindsay Hoyle.
To prevent any inaccurate speculation, I'd like to confirm that upon receipt of information that I felt it was relevant, I passed this on to the Metropolitan Police in good faith, as is my duty and responsibility. It is regrettable this rapidly ended in the media.
It is quite an odd moment, that, isn't it? What did you think, Liz?
I mean, like, this whole stuff around Mandelson, around Epstein, is all quite extraordinary. And, you know, that all of this is happening at the highest levels of the UK government, internationally, the royal family. That the Speaker of the House is then the person who reports that Lord Mandelson is, you know, claimed to be about to flee the country. It just kind of brings to a head the level to which this is something that was operating, if you like, at the upper echelons of our society. You know, Lindsay Hoyle's been in the British Virgin Islands and come with this information. Now, I don't know what else Lindsay Hoyle was supposed to do, to be honest, apart from report it to the police. And I think he had to fess up about that today because it would undoubtedly have come out. And there have been some questions about, you know, his transparency with the House before. So he needed to front this. But it's just another extraordinary element of this story that leads you to kind of like, well, who else in the senior ranks of bits of the UK establishment is connected to this in some way? It's It's quite crazy.
We can't let you go, Liz, without acknowledging that, I mean, these are interesting times for the SNP in Scotland. Let's just face it. Are you still in touch with your former boss, Nicola Sturgeon?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, not on a daily basis. It's not 24-7 like it used to be when I was doing the job. But yeah, you know, there's an election coming. There's a lot of stuff being thrown around in all directions in Scotland. And yeah, it makes it for a fascinating bit of politics at the moment.
Liz, thank you very much indeed. Liz Lloyd used to be an advisor to Nicola Sturgeon. You're with Times Radio. It's 23 minutes past two. And next, we can't resist it, I'm afraid. We're going to have to talk about the weather. Has the spring sprung? It's Jane Garvey on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit your local Wix store.
Kate Borsay on Times Radio.
With the hours ticking down to the pivotal Gorton and Denton by-election, could this Greater Manchester seat, once one of the safest Labour seats in the country, spell the downfall of Keir Starmer and his government? Well, look at that. The Labour MP Carl Turner, himself a barrister, will tell us why he opposes his own government's justice reforms, and the big brain of Adam Bolton joins us to unpack the day in politics.
Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio.
Step out of your ordinary and discover something new on a Cunard voyage from Hayes Travel. Book selected 2026 and 2027 voyages before the 2nd of March and enjoy 10% off. That's 10% off the Norwegian fjords, transatlantic crossings, Europe, the Caribbean and more. This offer must end March the 2nd, so book your Cunard voyage with a low deposit at Hayes Travel today. Conditions apply. At all protected.
We asked patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital what makes someone special.
They can make me laugh lots and lots and lots and lots.
They have to like arts and crafts.
Their favourite food is chocolate cake.
They might be a magician, so they can magically make me better.
They will be kind.
Does that sound like you? Be someone special and leave a gift in your will to Gosh Charity. Search Gosh Legacy for your Gifts in Wills guide.
Thank you.
The Story, the award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Afternoons on Times Radio with Wix. Right now, the kitchen and bathroom sale is on. There are options to suit every budget and every home. Browse all the kitchen and bathroom sale offers at wix.co.uk.
The sun has got his hat on. Hip, 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 hooray. The sun has got his hat on and he's coming out today. Now we'll all be happy.
Isn't that wonderful? Hip, 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 hooray. It was my choice.
The sun has got his hat on and he's coming out today. He's been tanning niggas.
Obviously, yeah, all right. Obviously, my younger colleagues wanted something a bit more with it, but I thought that was nice. Now, after weeks of rain and cold, today could reach highs of 18 Celsius in the southeast of England. Weather expert Jim Dale is the person we turn to at times like this. Is this unusual, Jim? I mean, it's still only February, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a reminder of so. February in the past hasn't normally been like this. Now, we've got to go back a little bit because I'm old enough to remember 2019, and so are you, of course. In London, we reached 21.2 degrees, so we're not going to get to those heights. And I remember distinctly that day, I was walking around London and it was people sitting there with little picnics and pigeons doing what they normally do. It just felt like a summer's day. Earlier today, I was in Oxford in the Christchurch area, Christchurch Meadow. It's a beautiful area, and to be honest with you, you could have thought, if you'd have just zoomed in on that and said, you know, this is a summer's day.
Yeah, so
to answer your question, yes, of course it's unusual, and it's a one-off.
Right. Well, I did have a quick look and the rest of the week doesn't look desperately promising. But there are sunny days in the weeks ahead, or so I've been reassured by my favourite weather app. So we shouldn't give up hope entirely.
No, there's two ways of looking on this, actually. Look, let's say this absolutely. When you get a day like this in February, I think you've got to embrace it. You shouldn't be sat in a studio behind a microphone, should you?
You should
be out in the parks or whatever, but you should be enjoying it. And that's the good side of it. The bad side of it, if I say that, is some of this potentially and probably, and going back to 2019 as well, has got a bit of climate change written all over it. If we go to Southwest France, for example, yesterday, maybe even today, nearly 30 degrees. And previous to that, only a week or two ago, it was blizzard territory. So you can see a real swingometer, those southerly winds. you know, but I don't know, 18, 19, 20, 21. When I was a kid, you didn't get anywhere near this, as I say, you get worse summer days. So highly unusual. But if you haven't made the most of it so far, then you've got a few hours, particularly if you're in the southeast, because I know there are people in the west at the moment, in the north, it's not quite as good. The clouds are already coming in. So make the most if you've got it, because it, as I say, it won't last, and we will be interchangeable now for probably a couple of weeks to come.
Now, the relentless rain, I kept thinking, well, this is awful and it can be a bit depressing. But on the other hand, it's going to be a glorious spring when it comes. Am I right? Will we see some wonderful colours and some fantastic bloomage in a couple of weeks' time?
You know what? You're thinking like I think sometimes. I always see nature and the weather as a balancing effect. And we get a load of one thing and it takes time to get out of that. And it's taken an entire season, to be honest with you. But I always think that, look, the next stage is going to come and it will reverse. So although we might be going into what you might call a mixed changeable state for the next couple of weeks, I think you're probably right. It might take some undoing. It might take some getting there. But with that rain that's already in the soil, et cetera, and, you know, a bit of sunshine like today, I think we'll see the flowers springing up as they do in these sort of conditions. I think you're dead right. So let's remain optimistic. Let's take the 18 degrees, what it is at the moment in London City Airport, as something to celebrate, I guess. And then we'll see what comes for the summer. I'll just wish it would stay there rather than necessarily get to 28 or 38. We'll see. We may talk again.
Oh, we will. There's no doubt about that, Jim. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
You're welcome.
That's our favourite weather expert, Jim Dale. Our handyman friend who often WhatsApps has said, I've asked my son, whose current medicine student debt is 98 grand, if he's pleased that 150 quid off my energy bill will offset his £7,000 interest. Yes, £7,000 of interest. Guess what? He wasn't in the least bit impressed, says that correspondent. I can't say I'm amazed by that. And what's this? Michael says, I don't care. I'm off to Egypt on Saturday. Get you? Right, it's Times Radio. If you want to take part, 0333 003 2353 is the WhatsApp number. We'd love to hear from you as ever. And next, coming up as more and more fallout from the Epstein files continues, we'll hear from a survivor of his abuse. It's 2:30, Times Radio. Here are the headlines. James Kitchen.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. The Speaker of the House of Commons has told MPs he spoke to the police before they arrested Peter Mandelson. Lindsay Hoyle was informed the former ambassador planned to leave the UK for the British Virgin Islands, an allegation that Lord Mandelson has dismissed as complete fiction. Reform UK's candidate in tomorrow's Gorton and Denton by-election won't be fined for breaching rules on campaigning material. A leaflet failed to include the name and address of the person promoting Matt Goodwin's campaign as required by law. But a High Court judge says he's satisfied it was an accidental error. A full list of candidates can be found at whocanivotefor.co.uk. The Prime Minister has said he's concerned following a security incident at a mosque in Manchester last night. A man was arrested after allegedly entering Central Mosque in the city carrying several weapons, including an axe. Police are still searching for a second man in connection with the incident. Sir Keir Starmer says he's committed to protecting mosques and those who pray in them.
We're establishing a new fund to monitor anti-Muslim hatred and support victims. And I want to reassure my honourable friend and the House that we will fight hatred and protect freedom of worship in this country.
A Lithuanian man will spend at least 25 years behind bars after killing a 9-year-old girl as she played outside her mother's shop in Lincolnshire. Davida Skibas, who's 26, was found guilty of stabbing Lilia Valutite in Boston in 2022. Families can expect cheaper energy bills from April after Ofgem announced a drop in the price cap. The regulator says average households will pay £1,641 a year, saving £117. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
Experience every rhythm of life in Antalya, Turkey. Find your calm on golden sand. Dive into blue. Feel grand. Savor the flavors as day turns to night. Dance till the morning light. Live every rhythm of life in one single vacation in Antalya.
Go Türkiye.
AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. That's why it's no surprise that more than 85% of the Fortune 500 use the ServiceNow AI platform. While other platforms duct tape tools together, ServiceNow seamlessly unifies people, data, workflows, and AI, connecting every corner of your business. And with AI agents working together autonomously, anyone in any department can focus on the work that matters most. Learn how ServiceNow puts AI to work for people at servicenow.co.uk.
Wake up to a brighter breakfast. Times Radio Breakfast, 7 days a week from 6 a.m.
Afternoons on Times Radio with Wickes. Ready to start planning your new kitchen or bathroom? If you'd like a personalised design, the Wickes free design service can guide you through the whole process, including a free home measure. Book today at wickes.co.uk.
Now, after me at 4 o'clock today, it is John Pienaar taking you through until 7 o'clock tonight. He's going to be talking to Louise Hague, the former Transport Secretary, now Labour backbencher. Also to the Ukrainian Nobel Peace Laureate, Oleksandr Matvichuk. Sorry about that. And he'll be taking the temperature too in Gorton and Denton. All eyes turn to Gorton and Denton tomorrow. It's the by-election, of course, and Constance Kampfner is there for the Times. She'll be telling John what she's sensing in the constituency ahead of the by-election tomorrow. Now, energy bills are set to drop by 7%, or on average about 117 quid a year from April. The update to the energy price cap comes after the government cut green levies on bills in the autumn statement. Let's check in with the head of policy for the charity National Energy Action, Matt Copeland. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good, thank you.
Now, is this good news?
It's undoubtedly good news. Whenever we see a fall in electricity and gas prices, that is good news for consumers. It's really good news for fuel-poor households who are struggling to heat their homes. It will mean that people can afford more warmth over the winter. However, prices do remain very high, unaffordably high for millions of households across the country. And we can't forget that more needs to be done to make sure that everyone can afford to heat their home properly throughout the whole of winter.
Now, it's been a cold winter. I don't think it's been the coldest in recent years, but nevertheless, some people will have been finding it really tough. And actually, the relief that days like today bring, well, it must be off the scale for some people, because you probably could get away without putting the heating on at all today.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have clients who come into our service who, however cold it is, just can't afford to put the heating on at all. So days like this where it does feel a bit warmer are of huge relief to people. And coming out of the colder snap that we've had in January and February, it is definitely relief, but it is still pretty cold. And people will be living in cold homes up until when, you know, it's sort of summertime.
Yeah. Can you just tell us a little bit about the extent of energy fuel poverty in the UK? What percentage of households in the country are filled with people who frankly sit shivering in the winter or just sit uncomfortably wearing a couple of jumpers and a coat?
So so there are different definitions of fuel poverty, different ways of measuring it. The government's official measurement in England puts it more than 10% of households living in fuel poverty. But we know that a lot more than that meet that definition that you're sort of talking about, which is people who are struggling to pay their bills, who aren't living in an adequately warm home. And it's a lot more than that. We think it's sort of 20% plus that are in that sort of situation. Measures like this will bring that down. It will help lots of households. It's universal support. But there will still be millions who are in that situation who just don't have the ability to put the heating on because they can't afford it.
And what about cooking? Oh, you still need to stick there. If you've got a gas cooker or an electric cooker, you need to stick it on, don't you?
Absolutely. A lot of our clients really struggle not just to heat their homes, but to cook meals. And we find lots of parents, for example, unable to afford to cook a meal for their children, particularly over the winter period and resorting to sort of cold meals in the evening. And that's not something that anybody wants to hear, but that is the reality. And again, things like this do help, but we've got a long way to go to ensure that everyone can live in a warm home, can give the life to their children that they deserve, and can really have access to the energy they need to stay alive.
The drop of about 120 quid a year, I mean, is it honestly going to make much of a difference to households who are struggling?
So I think it is material. I think if it was an increase of £120 a year, I'd be saying that is a big increase that was unaffordable for people. So 120 quid has to be said to be something that is material for people, and it will help people afford their bills. But the reality is that it won't go all the way, and we've got millions of households who will still struggle to pay it. So on the one hand, it is a lot of money and it will make a lot of difference to people. On the other hand, it won't make enough difference to enough people to eliminate fuel poverty. And that's what we're all trying to do.
And Ed Miliband, who's in charge of all this, the Energy Secretary, he has been warned that his net zero targets are getting in the way of cheaper energy bills. Where do you stand on that?
I think the biggest driver that we've seen on energy bills over the past 5 years is the gas price. And while other costs do drive energy bills up and down, so for example, policy costs and the cost of building out the network, the biggest threat of very, very high energy bills is the gas price. So trying to be less exposed to that gas price is important. However, to do so requires quite a big build out of infrastructure, and we have to make sure that the way we pay for that is as fair as possible and that the poorest households aren't picking up a disproportionate amount of the cost. I think the risk is that they do, and we end up putting too much of that cost onto the lowest income households. So I think that it's probably the right thing to do, but they really need to think about how that cost is picked up.
Yeah, okay. And just a quick word on why the gas price, I mean, why it's going up.
Sorry, what was that? I just missed it.
Yeah, no, you seem to have a bit of interference there. It wasn't one of your associates budging into the conversation. Why is gas going up so much?
Well, I think gas has actually come down for this next period, but it initially went up because of the geopolitical yeah. situation.
Yeah, over which, to be fair, the government...
In Russia and Ukraine, but yeah, then...
The government doesn't have limited... I mean, it can't do a lot about that, can it?
No, it can't, but we can, as the government's trying to do, become less reliant on gas and move towards sort of cleaner electricity and heating, which is what it's trying to do through the Clean Power Plan and a Warm Homes Plan. But we need to make sure the way we pay for that and the way we pay for the infrastructure does not disproportionately hurt low-income households.
Just a quick question for you, actually, from a listener who says, I would be keen to subsidise the bills of a family who are struggling. Do you have a way in which we can offer support? So, yeah, is there a good charity that people who have fortunately for them, do have a bit of spare money? What can they do? Can they contact you, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're National Energy Action, www.nea.org.uk, and we provide financial support, but also advice to low-income households who are struggling with their bills. So I hope we're a good place to start.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time. Matt Copeland, who's the head of policy for the charity National Energy Action. And thank you to that questioner. I hope that's helped a bit. The number, if you need it, we're just a help service. We're a help desk. 0333 003 2353. Now, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor has been slapped with a riding ban, according to today's edition of The Sun. The paper is reporting that the image of the former prince grinning on horseback was viewed as a rather bad look by courtiers. This comes a day after MPs lined up to condemn the prince's conduct while serving as a trade envoy, including this description of him from the Trade Minister, Chris Bryant.
A rude, arrogant and entitled man who could not distinguish between the public interest, which he said he served, and his own private interest. I remember him coming to visit the sea cadets in Tonopandy. They were absolutely delighted and excited to meet a member of the royal family. But he insisted on coming by helicopter, unlike his mother, who came twice to the Rhondda and always came by car. He left early and he showed next to no interest in the young people.
Chris Bryant. Andrew, of course, denies any wrongdoing. Let's talk to royal correspondent Rupert Bell. So the fact that he can't go riding anymore, will this be a significant blow to him, Rupert?
Yes, because in many ways, Jane, you're wondering what's he doing with his time. Now, obviously, he's pressing legal issues, but in terms of just trying to lead as normal life as possible, riding seemed to be, when he was living in Windsor, the one sort of thing he was able to do. But that picture that came out just after a series of revelations with him grinning on horseback and then seen out driving and also looking as if he hadn't got a care in the world was almost the decision that actually from that moment onwards, he was got out of Royal Lodge and said, we don't need to see you in any sort of circumstances because you're not understanding the severity of the situation that you are creating. Now, it's going to be much harder to photograph him riding a horse in Sandringham, should he wish to. It's not as public a place as Windsor Great Park, but you can bet your bottom dollar there will be photographers out there looking to see what he's getting up to in now that he's living up there. So I understand where it's coming from, if this revelation is true. Because he has got to, and even in that clip you heard from Chris Bryant, he has got to at some stage start to, even though, as you say, he's protested his innocence throughout, understand the magnitude of the issue he is creating for the royal family by what he has allegedly been involved in, and as all a result of the Epstein file. So for him not riding, it just is a further sort of restriction on what he can do.
Yeah. I guess the royal family simply need more images of him laughing on horseback, as you say, like a hole in the head. But as you also say, it does rather beg questions about what he can do. Is he allowed, in speech marks, to go out for a walk? Can he do anything like that?
I would have thought so, because he's not formally under arrest, is he? He was questioned. So why not? I mean, if he goes for a walk around the Sandringham estate, which is a pretty big tranche of land that they've got there, then perhaps he could. But, you know, he is basically, it would seem, a prisoner in his home. But he's created this problem for himself. And, you know, that this is the issue. By the fact is, he, you know, wherever he's gone, there's always seems to have been negative comments about him. Even what Chris Bryant was talking about. I mean, I know people talking to people who say exactly the same thing that was said in Parliament yesterday. So it's not unusual for people to come away with that opinion of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. So at the moment, he is going to have to regroup, fiddle his thumbs, and maybe he's ending up just watching daytime television. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens going forward. But if he's seen walking, as long as he's not smiling, then that might be all right.
Yeah, you're actually right. He mustn't smile. Nobody should watch daytime television. It is the last refuge of the scoundrel, isn't it, Rupert? You'd never watch it unless there was a race meeting.
Well, yeah. Well, I will be at Cheltenham Festival, and your listeners might be to know that I'm juxtapositioned between Prince Andrew, well, Andrew Mountbatten not riding, and Constitution Hill not running in the Champion Hurdle. So I've been caught between two masters in the last half an hour or so. But just to let you know on the racing front, Jane.
Yeah. Well, what's the latest on Constitution Hill then? We're still a bit doubtful, are we?
He's not running now. They've pulled the plug.
Right.
They've absolutely decided it's a flat racing career for Constitution Hill, and I think they've taken a sensible decision that, and that's one horse we didn't want to be seen being ridden on March the 10th, I think, and a sensible decision has been made.
Okay, so how long have we? Is it 2 weeks until the Cheltenham Festival starts? Then I'm just thinking about it.
Yes, you're absolutely right. March the 10th, 2 weeks, and which will be a welcome respite from talking about what's going on in the land of the royal family.
Yes, thank you very much. He wears two hats, two flat caps, really. It's Rupert Bell. Thank you very much. I always think of Cheltenham as it's the start of spring, isn't it, really? You do get some sunny days down at the Cheltenham Festival, and you also get some very wet ones. Rupert, thank you. You're with Times Radio. It is 13 minutes to 3 o'clock. Coming up, the very best telly recommendations of the week. We're going to talk about the Dyers, Danny and Danny, buying a caravan park, and that unsettling ITVX drama, The Lady, about Sarah Ferguson's former dresser Jane Andrews. This is Jane Garvey on Times Radio with Wickes, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide. Start your day with Times Radio's essential morning briefing. With intelligent conversation and incisive analysis from some of the most respected names in politics, culture and entertainment. Hear well-informed opinion and quality journalism on all the big stories making the headlines. Times Radio Breakfast, tomorrow morning from 6, with Nationwide, a good way to bank.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
I believe those who are curious see the world differently.
Hello, Greg James here.
And I'm Seema Pankhania.
And we're the hosts of The Tesco Kitchen.
Every week, Greg and I are joined by a real food legend to cook a recipe that really means something to them and show us how it's done.
This week, we're joined by food royalty with the one and only Monica Galletti.
Monica is going to be giving us our very own masterclass in cooking her Samoan pani popo. Soft, fluffy buns that are going to change your breakfast game forever.
Move over, porridge. There's a new sheriff in town.
It's live right now on YouTube, so go check it out.
At Viking, we've always been curious and quite a bit different. For over 25 years, we've been connecting the thinking person with the world. First on the great rivers, then on all five oceans, now on all seven continents. We are One Viking, exploring the world in comfort.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
This is Times Radio.
And to some of your thoughts this afternoon, Susan says, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor on horseback. Just stop photographing him. It's simple. At the moment, Susan, there is no chance that any photographer worth their salt wouldn't take an image of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor wherever they were to find him. I mean, it just wouldn't make any journalistic or news sense. I mean, I sort of see what you're getting at, but I think we all know it doesn't work that way. Anne says, I've got no time for Andrew, but he does need to be able to exercise, and horse riding is exercise. Sandringham is also private property, so we, in speech marks, should not dictate. The king is the one to decide. Well, if the sun's to be believed, the king has decided and Andrew isn't allowed to go out riding. Now, let's talk telly. And in fact, there is a connection here because as we invite Scott Bryan into the radio lounge of the afternoon. How are you, Scott?
I'm good, thanks. You're right.
Yes, not too bad, thank you. We can talk about this show, The Lady, on ITV and ITVX. Now, I've watched it. I've watched all of it. And I'm not really a binge viewer of stuff, really, at all. But I kind of hate myself for having watched it. Right, let's just briefly, if you can, Scott, just outline what it's about and why some people, myself included, might feel a bit uncomfortable about it all.
Yeah, so it looks at the rise and fall of the former royal dresser, Jane Andrews. She worked from M&S, ended up getting a job for Sarah, for Duchess of York. And then she was convicted for the murder of her boyfriend, Thomas Cressman. About 25 years ago. And it's a four-parter. It's made by Left Bank Pictures. They've also done The Crown, of course. And I find it's like it's sort of the merge of what really sells and works on ITV, which is shows about the royals or some connection to the royal family, no matter how tenuous, and also a crime sort of thriller, which is what this is in four-parter. I think I'm guessing here, but I'm sort of thinking the reason why you feel a bit uncomfortable is possibly the fact that the Sarah, for Duchess of York, is a character in this played by Natalie Dormer. Natalie Dormer, who has said subsequently that she's donating her fee from appearing in this programme. I think because of the depiction they've given of her, which was, of course, filmed prior to emails connecting her to Jeffrey Epstein, I sort of think that she's given quite a I mean, I wouldn't like, I mean, I'd say like generally quite kind portrayal. I mean, at least from what I've seen, I haven't seen the full series, admittedly. I have seen more than the first episode. But I think in light of, you know, all of the recent revelations, I think it's made quite a lot of people uncomfortable.
Yeah, I should say that the acting is excellent throughout. It's not the acting I've got any issues with. And it's unfortunate for Natalie that she effectively has lost out financially through no fault of her own. I mean, she's probably taking quite a hit there, presumably.
Yeah, I would reckon so. I mean, we, of course, don't know the fee that you would get, but she's one of the central main characters in this. And the way that it would normally work for a lot of actors is you maybe only are tied to a couple of projects in a year because, of course, they're so consuming in terms of making. So, of course, it can be lucrative if you're on an ITV drama, but certainly if you donate it, it would be quite a financial hit, yeah.
I think the other reason that I'm uncomfortable, and I appreciate I've seen all of it, is that Jane Andrews was, a troubled soul. She didn't come from a family who didn't care for her. In fact, far from it. Her parents seem very loving and attentive, if this drama is to be believed. But she did have psychological problems. And I think the whole thing ended on a slightly ambivalent note. I mean, she also kept friendships up. I mean, Jane Andrews was not without people who supported her. So that isn't to say that she hadn't committed a really violent crime and served time for it. I don't know. It just left me troubled. But at the same time, Scott, I kept watching. So what does that say about me?
I'm sort of intrigued about why you went through all four episodes.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really good question. I mean, not all at once. You need to understand. I'm not a binger. It's taken me all week to get to the end of it because it was well done and it was pacey. And in spite of everything, I couldn't quite remember how it all ended. So I needed to get there to find out exactly how it ended. But I just felt a bit grimy. And there we are.
I'm not sure whether any of what you've just said is going to be a quote on the side of a bus promoting the actual TV show.
No, I just felt a bit... No, it won't. You're absolutely right. Now, something else I haven't seen but I'm intrigued by is this new show on Sky. I mean, this is real monkey tennis territory, isn't it, really? The Dyer's Caravan Park. Now, this is Danny and Danny, the Dyers, trying to rescue a caravan park. My big question here is, why?
Well, having seen the first episode, that's still a question I have from watching it. I mean, this is a continuation of shows that have been very popular, where you get a household name thrown into something that is maybe beyond their normal wheelhouse, and it's about them trying to apply themselves and making friends along the way. I mean, we've had this with Clarkson's Farm, we've had this with Richard Hammond. I mean, it seems to be like a mainstay, really, and you get to see how much they really care about a particular issue. And for Danny, as in the older Danny, he went to caravan parks a lot when he was a kid. He has pointed out that there's been the ongoing decline of seaside venues and particularly caravan parks, and this place that he ends up taking on is losing about $150,000 a year, or in revenue it is, at least.
Yeah.
So he's trying to rejuvenate it. I think the issue is his heart's in the right place. And of course, he comes across as that kind of likable person you always see in a lot of the shows or times you see him being interviewed. But it doesn't really seem that he's got really a plan for what he wants to do. Like, he calls a meeting and brings in everyone and listens to their ideas.
Yeah.
But then from that point onwards, like, the show just falls into kind of Top Gear-esque gimmicks rather than actually has a full kind of business plan, at least at first. And I don't know, it just sort of feels as if they turned up and then they were thinking to themselves, why are we here?
I can't really get my head around it. Is this legit? Are they really going to the caravan park and putting the hours in and working and trying to come up with a business plan?
Well, at the start, he's not there because he's actually at the Brit Awards and he's promoting his other film. So, I mean, I would say that causes a question. I mean, it's a bit kind of, they do highlight the stakes that he has put a financial amount of money into it and he does care. So that suggests that is true. But I would just find it pretty unexceptional. Now, I would also say that if you're a fan of Danny Dyer and Danny Dyer, you're probably not going to care that much because it's just a vehicle for them to talk and be out of their comfort zone and do silly things. But I'm not sure beyond the basic premise whether it's actually trying to do anything that's kind of turning the dial, moving the dial forwards in any particular way.
Yeah, he. I mean, can you break it to us gently? Does he revive the fortunes of this caravan park? Do you know?
I've only got the preview of the first two episodes, so I'm gutted to say I can't tell you.
Oh, we're left very much on tenterhooks there. It has to be said, though, that Danny Dyer knew what he was doing when he called his daughter Danny Dyer, didn't he? Because he must have, he must have looked into the future and realised that they could have such a good TV career as a joint enterprise later in life. It really works. Now, this is serious. The factual drama on Channel 4, Dirty Business. There's some great people in this, David Thewlis, Jason Watkins, but it's just, it's so depressing. Tell us about this.
I mean, it looks at the state of the water, state of the water industry since privatisation in the 1980s. And I think it looks at particular case studies, and it also looks at the activists who have spent a lot of their lives sort of trying to improve the nation's rivers and also trying to work out why. And you're right, it continues the continuation. It continues a trend that we've seen in public service broadcasting TV, particularly of docudramas or factual dramas that are very meticulously researched and trying to highlight an institution that needs to have greater scrutiny within our society. So, of course, Mr. Bates being probably the most successful one. But there's been, I think, countless others that have been inspired from this. And this feels one, certainly, it's created by Joseph Bullman, who's won BAFTAs for similar vein documentaries before. It's had more than a decade's worth of research that's gone into it. And I would say that when you're watching it, you are presented with a lot of information very quickly. Like, statistics being thrown up on the page, people reading aloud letters and correspondence. It's one of those shows that purposefully, I say, and quite rightly, makes you angry because you're wondering how things have managed to be the way that they are, essentially. It's not an easy watch, but neither should it be.
No, it definitely shouldn't be. I just wonder, though, how many people have got the appetite, Scott, at the end of a working day to sit down on their sofa and watch this. Sometimes you feel these dramas, however important, they're not designed to end your day on a high, are they?
No, I mean, I think that is the challenge. I mean, I would say with this show, you won't regret watching after you have seen it, along with a lot of others. But I would say it's not necessarily easy if you've had a long day to be watching something like this either. It really depends on your state. But there are 3 episodes if you're ready to take them on.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time, Scott. Scott Bryan, a leading TV critic. We were talking there about Dirty Business. Before that, the Dyer's Caravan Park. And then before that, the lady on ITVX. And Ryan went too soon with the music there. Some of you may have picked that up. Scott carried on very professionally. But as Ryan has got the orchestra going, I think it's only right that we just enjoy it for a little while. Here we are, 20 Seconds of Glory.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock. This is Jane Garvey on Times Radio. In the next hour, we'll talk to a survivor of Jeffrey Epstein. Snoop Dogg is in Swansea. What is he doing there? And our big interview is with the best-selling novelist Ellie Griffiths, one of my favourites. Here's the news at 3, James Kitchen.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. It's emerged that Peter Mandelson was arrested by police after the Commons Speaker warned detectives the former cabinet minister was potentially planning to flee the country. Addressing MPs, Sir Lindsay Hoyle said he felt duty-bound to share what he'd been told during a visit to the British Virgin Islands.
I'd like to confirm that upon receipt of information that I felt it was relevant, I passed this on to the Metropolitan Police in good faith, as is my duty and responsibility.
Officers arrested Lord Mandelson hours later on Monday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. The former British ambassador to Washington has called claims he would leave the country baseless. Sir Keir Starmer has accused the Conservatives of scamming the country on student loans. During Prime Minister's questions, the Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch warned the current system was at breaking point. She asked whether the PM would cut interest rates on the loans, to which he replied his government was already tackling the cost of living.
We inherited their broken student loans system.
We've already introduced maintenance grants to improve the situation, which they scrapped. And we will look at ways to make it fairer.
The Tory leader responded by accusing Labour of inaction on the challenges facing young people and prioritising the welfare state instead.
He says they're fixing the problem. The fact is, he's not. Why is it that I'm willing to ditch old Conservative policies that don't work and he wants to keep them? He's not going to do anything about it at all. On Monday, they voted to increase benefits yet again. The fact is, he is taking money out of the pockets of graduates and giving it to people who are not working. It is not fair.
A minister said the UK is pausing the process of confirming the deal to hand over the Chagos Islands to Mauritius while details are discussed with the United States. The move comes after Donald Trump urged Sir Keir Starmer to scrap the agreement last week, despite earlier expressing support for the treaty. The deal would see Britain cede sovereignty of the territory to Mauritius and pay £100 million a year to lease back the Diego Garcia military base. And in the past few moments, the BBC is now reporting the government, the UK government, says there is no pause on the Chagos deal. That's going against what the Foreign Office Minister, Hamish Faulkner, was reporting to the Commons earlier. Elsewhere, Reform UK's candidate in tomorrow's Gorton and Denton by-election won't be fined for breaching rules on campaigning material. A leaflet failed to include the name and address of the person promoting Matt Goodwin's campaign as required by law. But a High Court judge says he's satisfied it was an accidental error. The former YouGov president Peter Kellner told Times Radio the traditional party system has been upended.
I don't think there's ever been a time in British politics where a parliamentary, or a by-election, possibly not even a normal parliamentary general election seat, where you've had such a domination of the insurgent voter in all over the mainstream, traditional mainstream voters in all.
A full list of candidates can be found at whocanivotefor.co.uk. Most energy bills are falling by 7% from April, equivalent to around £10 a month. The energy regulator Ofgem says average households will pay £1,641 a year. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker. Afternoons on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms.
It's been quite a confusing afternoon in terms of the Chagos Islands, that's for sure. It's 4 minutes past three. This is Jane Garvey on Times Radio. So an hour ago, we reported that the BBC had reported that the UK government said there was going to be a pause on the Chagos deal. I can now report again, as indeed our newsreader did, that the UK government has said there's no pause on the Chagos deal. And Hamish Faulkner made, presumably, an error when he said that there might be. So I hope everybody's keeping up at the back. We will let you know what is going on there. John Pienaar, I'm sure, will be able to clear things up here on Times Radio between 4 o'clock and seven. Now, the terrible truth is we might never know how many victims and survivors of Jeffrey Epstein there are. And their stories are complex, and of course, they're theirs to tell. And Fee has been speaking to a woman called Rena Oh, who's an artist, a mother, and somebody who became involved with Epstein at the age of 21 when he offered to pay for her art tuition. Her story is complicated, like so many young women who were in his orbit. Since the release of the Epstein files, the story has been quite inescapable. Fee has been asking Rena what that has all been like, and we should just say that some of this content might be difficult for some people to hear. Here is Rena.
His image doesn't really bother me that much anymore, but it's when I hear too many graphic details of what he did, not just to me, but the other girls, that is very triggering. And then, you know, we'll trigger each other. Like sometimes when we're in group therapy, there's some things that we just can't say out loud. And this is why I've always been emphasizing that please, please censor, you know, this type of material. It's not healthy for anyone who's a survivor of this type of violence. I suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. And when I do get triggered, that sort of gives me a flashback and I'll relive the experience in real time. And most people who don't have this disorder don't understand that the memory flashbacks feels brand new, feels fresh every single time I go through an episode of PTSD. And unfortunately, you know, I'm just managing my symptoms. I don't know if it'll ever go away, but that is one of the aspects. People are constantly talking about it, and I see it on the internet. They have a tendency to gravitate towards the darkest material that were released in the files, and I don't think that's healthy, not just for the survivors, but for the general public, to be obsessing over dark material, and that becomes a topic of conversation during lunch, at the lunch table. I think we need to focus more on justice for the survivors and holding people accountable than going into and repeating all these dark details. We know they're in the files, but to talk about it constantly, and I see it in, popping up in the social media feed, it is just coming up over and over and over again. There's specific emails that people are pointing out, and it's just really dark.
Do you also think, Rena, that there is so much focus on the powerful men who've been involved in Epstein's life, Epstein himself? In this country, there have only been arrests for other crimes to do with his business dealings, but not even that has happened in the United States. And I wonder what your thoughts are about that.
I think there are a lot of people who may be compromised here in the United States. This is where most of his, the core of his crimes and networking took place. I can't say all of his crimes took place in the United States. Jeffrey Epstein traveled extensively. He didn't remain in one location, just even for a week. He was constantly on the go. If you look at the flight records, he went from country to country to country. And I suspect that he committed crimes everywhere he went. He left a footprint in every single city that he traveled to. And I have proof from one incident, one story that he told me, that he used to engage in illicit acts in one of these destinations that's not even in the flight logs. So now we know that Jeffrey Epstein took commercial flights or other means of transportation in order to get access to small children, you know, in foreign countries. And they're most likely very poor, destitute small children. What's going on here in the United States? Well, I think there are a lot of people who may be compromised. I don't know. We haven't seen the full disclosure, the full transparency. There are several million pages that the government is unwilling to release. I think in European countries, they're doing a much better job. I think they're going to release their every country in the European Union, I hope, and I see the beginning of this, will be releasing their own version of the Epstein files. I don't think they should hand their files over to the U.S. government, because then we'll never see day of light. I think every country in Europe should release their own files and create their own Epstein library that's not as disorganized as the one that we have here, where they forgot to redact the survivors' identities, bank account information, and names, and then they redacted all of these other people who are sending salacious email messages to Jeffrey Epstein. When I was around Jeffrey Epstein and I asked him for a favor, he picked up the phone and said, "Oh, well, you should have asked me for this a very long time ago. Like, you know, I can get anything or anyone to do anything for me. Like, I get favors all the time." And he said, "I know everyone in Washington." So when he said he knew everyone in Washington, I assumed maybe a handful of people, you know, he was connected. I had no idea at the time that he knew people in Washington that were connected to government in the matter that has come out over the years.
How old were you, Rena, when you first met him?
I was 21 years old. I had just turned 21, college-aged student.
And to those people who say you walked willingly into his townhouse, you had a friendship with him that involved money because he was sponsoring you. Therefore, that undermines the position of a victim or a survivor. How do you explain that to people?
You know, I stopped getting defensive more recently. Like years ago, I always got defensive and said, "No, that's not true." But I just think they just don't know any better. These are people who, lucky for them, have never been abused in this manner, so they wouldn't understand. Any survivor of this type of violence, they all understand, whether they're a survivor Jeffrey Epstein or another predator. If they can't understand this type of situation. But when I start explaining that Jeffrey Epstein had narcissistic personality disorder, and he was a malignant psychopath and a narcissist, and a lot of times narcissists are really good, actually all the time, they're really good at luring in anyone and deceiving them. And this is what Jeffrey did, and he made everything sound so great. You know, you get drawn in and sucked into this vortex of their lies, and then they trap you inside. It's very hard to get away from narcissistic abuse. They will continue figuring out a way to pull you back in. And sometimes it takes years before you realize that you're being abused by a narcissist. And it's not always just, you know, physical abuse. It's very damaging. It's mental abuse. It's spiritual abuse. And when people say, you know, you can't be a victim because you were over the age.
I completely hear you on that. And do you know what, Rena? Every time I see that photograph of the former Prince Andrew, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, he denies any wrongdoing, crouched on all fours with what is clearly a very young woman lying on the floor next to him. Her face is being blacked out. But I look at that woman and I think you're probably in your 40s. Maybe you're in your 50s now. You have tried to leave that behind you. We don't know who that was. You may have kids. You may have a partner. You may have struggled to have both of those things. It's a person, isn't it, whose life story includes that wherever she is now in her life. She will be constantly reminded of a youth that many of us are just allowed to forget, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, unfortunately for anyone who ever met Jeffrey Epstein, this is just something that we will always, you know, have as being part of our journey or history, but it's not going to define who we are today. I hope anyone who's listening who interacted with Jeffrey Epstein or is a survivor of any other predator, I want them to, you know, I want to send a message to all of the survivors out there that you don't have to let what happened to you during that one time frame in your life where you were being abused define how you're going to live for the rest of your life. You know, that's a small frame in this large picture that's called your life. You know, it's something that happened before, but they do have to deal with the trauma and process it, because a lot of times, unknowingly, you know, it can lead to years of living a dysfunctional lifestyle.
You have been very brave. You are very eloquent in the way that you talk about what has happened to you. You've got kids of your own. I mean, that's a tough one, isn't it? How much do they understand about what happened to you?
So my children are now college aged. I know I look a lot younger than I am. But my older son, he is more understanding than the little one, who's, you know, 2 years younger. I didn't tell my family for a reason for a very long time because I didn't want my children to know this is what happened to mommy. I shielded them their entire lives. They were raised very differently than the way I was raised. I was always on the lookout for predators everywhere we went, and to the point where they thought I was crazy. And I was not. I was just being overtly protective. And it comes with the territory of having survived a sex predator like Jeffrey Epstein and this entire network that he had supporting his bad behavior. More recently, when they went into adolescence, I started telling them bits and pieces, but I never told them the details and I refused to tell them the details. And my son called me a few days after the Epstein files were released, but he called and said, "Mom, are you okay?" I was like, "What do you mean? Like, what do you mean I'm okay? Like, are you okay? Like, what's going on?" He goes, "Mom, I just read the news. I heard the files were released. Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think I'm okay." And then he just burst into tears and said, "Mom, I'm so sorry this happened to you." And he goes, "I don't want to hear the details. You know, I don't want to know what they did to you, these horrible people. You know, I just want to make sure that, Mom, you're okay." And I was like, I'm fine. But that to me hurt more than anything else that I've ever gone through, is to have him like listen to my son sobbing on the other end of this phone call.
And I wonder whether you feel that what's become quite a trite message to victims and survivors of "we're thinking of you" when very important people take to a stage, prime ministers, presidents, kings, you know, all of the great and the good say our thoughts are with survivors and victims. Is that enough? Is there something better, Rena, that they could be saying?
Oh, absolutely. These are politicians who have a lot of resources. They're connected to the infrastructure of government, you know, and healthcare services, social care services. I appreciate their support, but I would love to see more than you know, "I support you." I'd love to see more than, you know, "I'm sorry, we stand with the survivors." Please walk with us. If you stand with us, walk with us, hold that survivor's hand and bring them out of that darkness. And if they need that mental health care, you have the resources as someone who is in a powerful government position. It's not that hard for a politician to sign off and put funds together to support, you know, mental health programs. Anonymous, you know, it doesn't mean you have to donate money. If you can donate money, that would be great. We could set up a mental health fund for different groups of survivors. But they may also have a lot of resources, especially if they're in a position of power in politics. They could just pick up the phone. You know, I know there are Jeffrey Epstein victims that are in England. There's several of them. And when people say, they make comments to me saying things like, "Well, Jeffrey Epstein's crimes took place in America, so why should we be responsible for the victims?" I'm like, because some of his victims are from your country.
That is the voice of an Epstein survivor, Rena Oh. Fee did that interview. Now, if you were affected by any of the issues discussed, please email feedback@times.radio and we'll get back to you with resources that can help. And you can hear a longer version of that interview in a bonus edition of the Off Air podcast this Friday, wherever you get your podcasts from. This is Times Radio, and next we're talking sport with Vassos. Today, what is Snoop Dogg up to in South Wales? This is Jane Garvey on Times Radio with Wickes. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Explore all the sale offers at wickes.co.uk or visit your local Wickes store.
Peter and Patrick are identical twins.
Dear Tesco Mobile Club Card customer, we have some important news to share regarding your contract. It's not changing. Because with Clubcard prices, your price stays frozen. So, unlike with some other networks, you'll have one less surprise bill to worry about. Yours helpfully, Tesco Mobile. It pays to be connected. P.S. Terms at tescomobile.com/frozen.
Until suddenly, at the age of 35, they weren't. Patrick was diagnosed with dilated cardiomyopathy, a rare inherited heart condition. So he was referred to Professor William McKenna's specialist team at University College Hospital and went on to have the heart transplant that eventually saved his life. But then, Peter, his identical twin, developed exactly the same symptoms caused by the same condition. He too needed an urgent heart transplant, and he too was able to have one. 20 years later, they took part in BHF's London to Brighton Cycle Challenge on a tandem, celebrating the 20th anniversary of their transplant and getting their lives back, so that they could, once again, be identical twins. Peter and Patrick survived, but many don't. British Heart Foundation is funding research to cure inherited heart disease so that they can help more people survive. When you donate to British Heart Foundation, you're helping to fund life-saving research. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Summer is calling. Book early for your trip to Turkey and get the most out of your holiday. Visit goturkeyair.com now and discover unforgettable experiences. Plan your summer getaway to Turkey today.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
Afternoons on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens, helping create kitchens to feel proud of. From expert design consultants who'll measure your space and bring your vision to life on a 3D plan, through to a professional installation service. Learn more at wickes.co.uk.
21 minutes past three. Now, I should say that about an hour ago, just before I discussed the beautiful spring weather with Jim Dale, we played an old version of a popular song that contained an offensive term. So I am extremely sorry about that. It's just worth saying it's the Gorton and Denton by-election tomorrow. It's an all-important test of political opinion, of course. It's turning into quite a tight race between Reform, the Greens and the Labour Party. Too close to call, that's what they're all saying. Reform will be hugely disappointed if they don't capitalise on their steady poll lead. And a bad result for Labour could potentially bring more peril for the Prime Minister. On Times Radio, we can guarantee that you will not miss a thing. You can hear all the results and analysis through the night tomorrow night. Tom Noonan is here presenting a special overnight show with Daryl Morris at the count with the result. And Callum McDonald will co-present the breakfast show live from Manchester on Friday morning. Now, Vassos is here. We're talking sport. And in particular, we're talking Snoop Dogg.
What's my name?
Swansea City Football Club welcomed one of its new owners with a guard of honour and twirling white towels for last night's match. Snoop Dogg took to the field in the club's colours ahead of its game against Preston North End. Snoop Dogg, he's been at the Winter Olympics, hasn't he?
He likes his sport. He's been having selfies with the British curling team. He asked them for the selfies in the very early stages of the Winter Olympics. I think what he's doing, I might be wrong, but I've heard reports that what he's doing is he's got a sort of Netflix thing and he's doing a sort of road trip through Wales. And as part of this, he now co-owns Swansea City Football Club. He turned up, you said, you know, dressed in what? He was head to toe in Swansea City merch. Swansea City merch, you know, literally everywhere. And he, or Swansea, had created these little tea towels with his face on them. And they were on every seat, and it was a sellout, and so they were all twirling them around and making a lot of noise, like Snoop Dogg asked, and there was a sort of guard of honor for him, and he did some selfies with fans. I mean, it was all the fun of the fair. I mean, I was listening to Talk Sport this morning, and the Swansea fans were calling in and saying absolutely loved it.
Well, yeah, because they think this is the answer to all their problems. I mean, the game itself, by the way, ended in a disappointing 1-1 draw.
Well, not a disappointing 1-1 draw for Swansea, because they equalised in the 95th minute.
Oh, brilliant.
Sadly for Snoop Dogg, he'd long since left the ground.
Oh, goodness. So he's not a committed fan of Swansea, then?
You don't, Snoop, for goodness sake. Maybe this is his first football match, but you don't leave before the full-time whistle, because that's the sort of stuff you miss.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm amazed. OK, so we're not sure of his commitment to the game itself. Am I being unfair?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, Luka Modric, the former Tottenham player, the Croatia star, Martha Stewart, are other names being linked as a sort of consortium
with Swansea?
With Swansea City. Ed Sheeran is the big shirt sponsor of Ipswich Town, and you can sort of see why. And do you remember the old days of Jack Walker, I know he was called Jack Walker, who bought Blackburn Rovers.
And they won.
And invested lots of money, and Alan Shearer played for them, and they won the Premier League. Mm. And then it became, I don't know, a sort of plaything for billionaires or countries. You know, Roman Abramovich started that, buying Chelsea for £1 and completely transforming them. And now you have the Man City model, sort of owned-ish by a country, essentially. Yeah. And now you've got the sort of celebrity ownership. I mean, not all. I mean, Wrexham is the famous example, with Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, who apparently watched the Sunderland Till I Die documentary, which is excellent.
It is the original and best.
It really shows what a football club means to the community, and Sunderland especially, fantastic. And actually, Wrexham is a sort of similar sort of club, although they were much, much lower when the cameras started rolling and Ryan and Rob decided to buy the club. I sort of think that the Welcome to Wrexham and the ownership thing happened simultaneously. So it was relatively low risk for them. But fair play, they've invested a lot of money into Wrexham. It's gone from a non-league side to a now a mid-table championship side.
I mean, I think they're in the playoffs now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, they were winning as Swansea were drawing last night in the championship. And my goodness me, back-to-back-to-back promotions. And they could even be a Premier League club this time next season.
Wrexham, yes.
Wrexham really could be.
Wow. I mean, you've got... That makes the whole TV tie-in just absolute box office, doesn't it? And what a great deal that was.
I wonder, and I know it sounds a little bit, I don't know, woo-woo, but when you get a little bit of Hollywood in a club like Wrexham, sort of Hollywood results start happening. You know, whenever they tend to go, there's always a last minute winner, or the goalkeeper scored a goal. I remember a few seasons. It's a funny old thing. And now you have got, I mean, obviously the benefits for a club are immense, because they get loads of kind of corporate sponsorship stuff. The visibility is huge. You know, for goodness sake, we would not be talking about Swansea City if Snoop Dogg had not been there last night. You've got Tom Brady at Birmingham City. Well, it's Will Ferrell at Leeds United. And he invested when they were a championship club and a sort of, you know, not in the Premier League. So they get a sort of meaningful impact with relatively small investment. You know, you're not going to get Will Ferrell investing in Manchester United, for example, who incidentally, just in the last few minutes, I noticed on the Times Online have published their latest figures after all of the redundancies. Sir Jim Ratcliffe and his sort of operating party have made. Apparently they're in profit, but their debt has gone up to more than 1.2 billion. So I don't quite get how that goes.
I don't either. But on the pitch, things are going better for Manchester United. They're going really well.
Yeah. So since they got rid of Ruben Amorim, I think they're unbeaten. They drew against West Ham, and otherwise I think they've won everything. So yeah.
It looks as though things are being turned around by someone who hasn't yet got the full-time job.
No, but he'd like it.
The reason I was slightly distracted is there's some breaking news. Gianluca Prestiani is going to miss the second leg of Benfica's Champions League tie against Real Madrid after UEFA rejected the club's appeal against his suspension. Now, just remind us what he got up to.
So he was accused of racially abusing Vinicius during the first leg in Benfica. He's the 20-year-old Argentine player who plays for Benfica. He said he didn't say what he said. I'm not going to repeat what he's reported to have said, obviously. He was given, and this isn't UEFA banning him for a one match in a very convenient way, so that it doesn't sort of inflame the second leg in Madrid. This is an independent, you know, when it gets passed, that sort of thing just gets passed straight to an independent tribunal. Mm-hmm. They banned him for a match. Benfica appealed. They rejected the appeal. So he is now going to be banned for the second leg for that one match.
I don't know. Maybe it's just my age. Sometimes I slightly despair at the conduct of some of these players. There is a moronic quality to some of them, isn't there? There's no doubt about that.
Well, whatever happened on the pitch last week, you know, the allegations of, you know, a racist term being used against Vinicius Jr. Against Vinicius Jr.
Because he's often on the receiving end.
What happened in the Premier League this last weekend, where we had two players posting pictures of their Instagram, one who missed a penalty, one who missed a good chance. And it was horrific, the sort of thing, you know. And then so it's almost as if, like, a little bit of racism happens over here, and then, you know, all the racists go, no, I can do that too. It's very, very sad.
Yeah.
And it is something that, I'm afraid, football does have to get a grip on.
Yeah, I mean, the abuse that the players got was, I mean, I did see it too. It is unbelievable that someone can sit in their own home or wherever they happen to be and think it's an acceptable thing to do, to target an individual in that manner. It's dreadful.
It's really horrific. And you just hope, because presumably this is a heat of the moment thing where they just get on their phone.
Who cares whether it's heat of the moment?
No. But they get on their phone. They don't sort of think it through. They don't use whatever, I don't know. Presumably, it is not beyond the realms that has left a digital echo somewhere, and that they can be found, and then they can be prosecuted, and then, you know, they can be suitably punished, and then it just sends a message, don't do it.
Yeah. However cross you are because your football team has lost, God, just grow up.
Please just grow up.
That's a very firm telling off, but we mean it because it's pathetic. Vassos, thank you very much. And we'll be back tomorrow. And we just don't know what the dizzying world of sport will offer us then. But Snoop Dogg, perhaps he just wanted to go. I mean, there are many attractions in Mumbles. It may just have been that he just wanted to, you know, explore. There's a particularly good ice cream parlour.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, and if he goes a bit further around the coast, there's nowhere more beautiful.
Some of the best beaches in the land.
Absolutely.
Absolutely true. Thank you very much. Vassos Alexander, more from the World of Sport with him at around the same time tomorrow afternoon. 3:30, Times Radio. The big interview of the day is with the best-selling author, Ellie Griffiths. Here are the latest headlines. James Kitchen.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. The Speaker of the House of Commons has told MPs he spoke to the police before they arrested Peter Mandelson. Lindsay Hoyle was informed the former ambassador planned to leave the UK for the British Virgin Islands, an allegation that Lord Mandelson has dismissed as complete fiction. Energy bills are to drop by £10 a month for an average household from April. The regulator Ofgem says the 7% fall in the price cap follows the government scrapping an energy efficiency scheme at the last budget. The Conservatives claim the drop's been achieved by sleight of hand, shifting green levies onto tax. Sir Keir Starmer and the Tory leader Kemi Badenoch clashed over the issue at Prime Minister's Questions.
Driven by the action that this Labour government has taken, we promised to cut the cost of living. We are cutting the cost of living.
For the record, energy bills are still higher than when he came into office.
Reform UK's candidate in tomorrow's Gordon and Denton by-election won't be fined for breaching rules on campaigning material. A leaflet failed to include the name and address of the person promoting Matt Goodwin's campaign as required by law. But a High Court judge says he's satisfied it was an accidental error. A full list of candidates can be found at whocanivotefor.co.uk. A judge sentencing a man for murdering a 9-year-old girl in a Lincolnshire street has described it as an horrific act of violence. Davida Skibas will spend at least 25 years in prison after stabbing Lilia Valutite in the heart in Boston in July 2022. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
Experience award-winning itineraries from aboard small luxury.
Saturday and Sunday nights from 10 with Daryl Morris.
Afternoons on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens. Choose from over 80 kitchen styles, whether it's your first home or your forever home. Find your dream kitchen at Wix. Prices start from under £3,000. Book your free kitchen design appointment today at wix.co.uk.
Times Radio, it's 26 minutes to four. It's just worth saying that around this time tomorrow, we'll be gearing up for Proud as a Peacock Award Day. It happens every Thursday, and it's your opportunity to win £250 in Wix vouchers by telling us why you or somebody in your life is just as proud as a peacock. And you can do that via email. It's janeandfee@times.radio, or you can use the WhatsApp. You can get an email in now. Why not get it in so you're in the mix for the big decision we make at about 10 to 4 on a Thursday afternoon? It's worth a go. 250 quid can go quite some distance at Wix. Get involved. Tell us why you're proud as a peacock. Quick shout out to Melanie, who says, thank you for promoting Swansea Bay and Gower. I work for the tourism department. And I love the show. Melanie, thank you. It is a great place to visit. And there truly are some amazing beaches. And Mumbles really is a great place to have a meal, a drink, and certainly an ice cream, as far as I'm aware. Unless the ice cream place isn't there anymore, but I'm sure it will be. Anyway, you can always get back and tell me. Right, now to our big guest this afternoon. It's Ellie Griffiths, who's back in the top 10 bestsellers with her latest Ali Dawson novel, The Killing Time. Now, this is a return to the 19th century for cold case detective Ali, whose cat Terry has gone missing. A colleague at her secret time-travelling unit offers to send Ali back just a couple of days so she can shut her cat flap. But it all goes belly up, and before she knows it, Ali's wearing a corset, enjoying an early morning cup of tea from an exhausted servant called Gladys, and going to the Great Exhibition. Let's face it, it could happen to any of us. Ellie Griffiths is not actually the author's real name. She began by telling me why it makes a very good crime writer name.
Absolutely fine with Ellie. I'm very in Ellie mode today. But my real name's Domenica. It's Domenica De Rosa. And I think we chatted last time about how I always thought that was the perfect writer's name. I thought I had the perfect writer's name. And I was originally published as Domenica. But then when I wrote a crime novel, I was told to get a crime name. So Ellie is my crime name.
And it's also the name of a relative, isn't it?
It is, yeah. My grandmother was Ellen Griffiths. And right. I don't know why I wasn't Ellen, actually. But I honestly think it's because Ellie fits really neatly between the G and the F. Yeah. On my covers.
I mean, you're right. It is weirdly a crime name. But, I mean, I always think of crime names like, you know, Razor Ron. Yes. And things like that. But somehow it works as a crime writer.
I think it might just be a British thing because, of course, I think in Italy, Domenica De Rosa might well be a great crime name. But I think Ellie Griffiths is just, well, it sounds gritty, doesn't it? I think it's... And there's also the thing, I don't know, but this is great for you and I, actually. But the thing that authors with FGH names sell better. Have you heard that one?
I haven't. Tell me more about this.
If you go into a bookshop, the idea is that A's at the top and Z's at the bottom, but FGH is on eye level.
Wow, okay.
So that is good for us.
So if you're struggling and your name's Alan, your surname's Alan, just it's quite simple, change your name.
Absolutely. Change it to an FGRH name. It is one of those things that doesn't hold up to even the slightest bit of interrogation.
We will get emails about this, but anyway, spirited. I've enjoyed it. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so those people are familiar with this latest series because you have specialised in creating central female characters and then letting them journey through a series of experiences. Dr. Ruth Galloway is your archaeologist and lecturer.
Yes.
And you've finished with her.
For now.
Okay. Yes. And Ali Dawson is your time-travelling police detective. I appreciate you've written other books, notably about Brighton as well, and police work there, and The Zigzag Girl as well is the start of another series. Keep up at the back. But Ali Dawson works for a cold case crime unit. I mean, they're not just cold cases, though, are they?
They're not, no. The joke amongst the team, and it's a tight-knit team, I realise that I really like writing about teams, is that their cases are so cold or so old, really, because they're frozen. So they call themselves the frozen people, but actually their cases are so cold and so old because they go back in time to solve them.
Right. Now, ordinarily, I don't believe in time travel, except there's something about the straightforward nature of your writing that makes me think that, in fact, it could well be possible.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Do you actually think, honestly now, do you think it is?
I don't think it is, really.
Oh.
But you never know. We travel in time every day, except we go forwards rather than backwards, and time behaves differently on the top of a mountain to the bottom of a mountain. So I guess that it could be possible. And if you read Carlo Rovelli, The Order of Time, he makes you honestly believe it is possible. But I just hoped that... I guess I hope that if people related to the characters in my book, they might take the time-travelling leap with me. And I kept thinking about that TV show. Do you remember... Life on Mars.
Yes.
Yeah. And I just kept thinking to myself, I don't know why they time travelled. I mean, there is an explanation. Honestly, don't remember it. But what I remember are the characters, you know, particularly, you know, the wonderfully awful Gene Hunt, the detective.
Yeah.
And I just hope that if people really sort of related to my characters, that they might take that leap into time travel with me.
Well, the latest book, The Killing Time, is set both in 2024, in the weeks before the general election, which now seems like a lifetime ago.
It really does.
But it was only about 18 months ago. It's weird. And the Great Exhibition in 1851. So it's July. It's always the same season, isn't it?
Well, it was actually cold in the frozen people. I think it was... I see what you mean, the same season that you left from.
In your books,
yes,
I thought
exactly.
You could only time travel back to the same season.
Yes, you're exactly right. Sorry.
Yeah, I know more about your books.
You really do. I'm so sorry. But basically, the first book's very cold and this one's very hot.
Yes. And it really comes across that life in a corset in a heatwave is no fun at all.
No.
I'm going to throw it over to you. I want you to set the scene here for people who haven't read the first book and are thinking, well, I'm not sure I buy this. What is the setup in the second book?
So in the second book, time travel, of course, goes badly wrong in the first book, because if you invent a way of time travel, it has to go wrong. So time travel's been banned for the group. And Ali's actually investigating a real cold case, which is that of a rather sinister psychic who might have been the cause of a young man's death. And then, which is where I'm hoping my readers will go with me on this, then something kind of terrible happens. Well, very terrible happens in that Ali's cat goes missing. And she wants to just go back in time for 4 days just to shut the cat flap. For me, that's a very reasonable reason.
I mean, it's Terry.
But it's Terry, her cat. You know, she has to go back. So she asks her colleague Bard if he can do it. And he takes her back. But in fact, he takes her back a long way too far. She's in 1851. She's in time for the Great Exhibition. She meets an old friend. She also possibly meets the sinister psychic. And I'm going to just do a bit of a spoiler. She does meet Terry, her cat.
Yes, okay, a few. I mean, so many of our listeners are cat lovers. They'll need to know.
Well, I'm the same. It is that whole thing about, you know, does the cat live? Yeah, the cat's fine.
Yeah, okay.
He's a cat.
Right, phew. The Great Exhibition, I sort of thought I knew about it, but I realised reading this that I don't know much about it. It was on an incredible scale, wasn't it?
It really was on an absolutely amazing scale. And really, it's because of the Great Exhibition, and it was Prince Albert's sort of dream, that we have the National History Museum, the Natural History Museum, the Science Museum, Imperial College, the Royal College of Music. We have all that because of this amazing thing.
That was him?
Yes, they all came from that, really, from this great outpouring of interest in natural history and science and the arts. So it really was quite an incredible thing. And although lots of the elite went to it, there were whole villages sort of in the countryside that were bussed out to the Great Exhibition. And in fact, there are really funny cartoons in Punch about men complaining that their wives no longer do housework because they keep going to the Great Exhibition. So I feel that's a good reason in itself, yeah. Isn't it?
It was in Hyde Park.
Yes, it was in Hyde Park, yes.
And how long did it run for?
Well, it ran for a long... I can't remember offhand, but it ran for a really long time.
So there was plenty of time to go more than once. And what was there? New inventions? Stuff that wasn't really in households yet?
Yeah, definitely new inventions, like new sort of steam inventions, new mining works and things like that. But also there was quite a lot... I suppose I'd always thought about it a bit in that bit of my mind that is called science and industry. But actually there was a lot of lot of stained glass windows, jewellery, fabrics, textile, things from around the world. The Koh-i-Noor diamond was there. So there was really, it ranges across, you know, the arts and science and decorative arts, of course, very well represented. So it must have been an amazing thing. And I think when Ali goes in there, she says that she thought of the Victorian era as sort of black and white or sepia, but this is Disneyland.
There are creepy tones, though, to this book, as there were with The Frozen People. And there is, I did know that there's quite a passionate link between the Victorians and spiritualism. And I was always told that was because, well, people lost so many children. But people must have lost children forever. I mean, people lost children, really, until... very, very recently. It was a matter of course that you'd have many children, and unfortunately quite a few of them would die.
Yeah, really tragic. And as you say, until really recently. I think there were a couple of other things at play in the Victorian era. There was a bit of a collective loss of faith, because there was a book called The Life of Christ, which was translated into English by George Eliot. And it said, which I don't think is that controversial today, but then it said that the Gospels weren't written at the time of Christ's life, that at least three of them are written a long time afterwards. And for the Victorians, I think this was like telling them that gospel truth wasn't true. And then you have The Origin of Species and Charles Darwin, and they were told they weren't descended from angels, they were descended from apes. So I think there was a bit of a scurrying around to try and find something to believe in, hence spiritualism and mesmerism, which comes into this book.
Well, mesmer, I've used the word mesmerised, I suppose, over the years, never had a clue where it came from. So tell me who Mesmer was and why he's still actually having an influence today.
Yeah, Franz Mesmer was he studied at the University of Vienna. He was a really educated man, but he believed in something called animal magnetism, which meant you could sort of channel the magnetism within the human body to cure you or to take you into trances and things. And he had a huge following, including Charles Dickens, including some very famous people believed in him. And he gave these incredible shows, which I've tried to recreate in the book, really, where he just made people go into trances and do strange things. Charles Dickens also believed that he could do mesmerism.
And he's in the book, isn't he?
He is in the book, yeah. Ali meets him very briefly, but she is seized by this almost uncontrollable urge to tell him about the Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah, and which, she can't do that.
Which she can't. There just aren't enough words. But he describes to her, which this is true, that he did a mesmeric experiment on a woman called Augusta de la Rue. And I think it's quite Dickens that with him, the gift only worked on attractive women.
Right, okay, handy.
Yes.
That hasn't entirely gone away, has it? I think occasionally you do see posters up for a psychic evening somewhere.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's a massive world of psychics out there, and also online psychics. You can get in touch online and get a reading. And I think it is still there, and I don't have any answers. I just have a lot of questions. I've always been very interested in what people believe, really, and why.
You haven't ever been to see a psychic?
Not personally. I did go in the course of, not one-to-one, but I did go in the course of researching another book with a friend to a sort of big psychic display, I don't really know the word for it, show, which was very, very interesting. I mean, a lot of it was that whole thing about, you know, your grandmother is old, and people saying, oh God, yes she is, you must be psychic, that's amazing, and she has grey hair. Yes, wow. But actually, there were other things that were less easy to explain, really. So it was an interesting evening.
Okay, so there genuinely were moments during that evening where you got a jolt.
Yeah,
and you
definitely.
Thought, how have they done that?
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's easy enough for someone to come on and say, Mary is coming through. Well, how many
yes.
of us?
Yes, and all those names that if you pick the right era, you yeah. can get the right sort of names, can't yeah. you? You wouldn't get Domenica, though, so I'd be a real challenge.
Well, if they did get Domenica, I would be really, really
yeah,
disturbed.
Yeah, me too.
Really disturbed. I mean, Ali has her misgivings about 1851 because there's a lot that shakes her liberal 21st century thinking, isn't there?
Yes.
And I was intrigued. First of all, the expression Home James is something that I've definitely used. Is it true that every single coachman was just called James?
Well, I think it was a thing that people just called their coachman, just not
regardless.
Bothering to yes, that just not bothering to find out their real names.
And there's also the fact that she rather enjoys mm-hmm. being waited on by a servant when she goes to stay with a former colleague from the 21st century who's wound up slightly stuck in 1851, but is actually enjoying herself. You'll have to read the book to find out who that
oh,
is.
Oh, yes.
But the servant puts a tea by a bed, and I was thinking, oh, you know, that would actually be all right.
I think Ali is really torn in this book, and that there is... she's really ambivalent about it, because, of course, on one hand, it's pretty nice to, this time round, first time she went to the 19th century, she lived a very sort of hand-to-mouth existence, and here she's suddenly quite wealthy and somebody of substance. She loves the clothes, she loves the tea by the bed, she loves to have a bowl of warm water to wash with until she realises that poor Gladys has had to walk up three flights of stairs with this bowl of water. So I think she's constantly guilty. She says at one point she thinks the guilt's going to kill her. Mm. But on the other hand, it's rather nice. It's rather nice to wear lovely clothes.
Yeah, she is very good though, and she doesn't get Gladys to fill a bath for her, does she?
No, this is her colleague's peculiarity, is that she likes to have a bath, which they think is all a little bit strange. But Ali can't bring herself to ask for that much water to be brought up the stairs. No, so
that'd be quite a shift for Gladys.
Yes, yes.
She doesn't like, this is Ali we're talking about now, the corset, as I mentioned earlier, and in the heat she gets something that I gather was quite common called corset itch.
Corset itch, yes, I read up on it. And doesn't it sound really horrible?
Really horrible.
And just that whole feeling of not being able to scratch and sort of being sort of tight-laced in that hot weather. But of course, being wealthy, she can ask her lady's maid to sort of sponge her down and make that a bit easier, which, again, she feels quite guilty about, but it does make things a little easier, yes. Imagine wearing all those clothes in that weather, really.
When did corsets stop being worn? Because I've got a vague memory of helping my grandmother into certainly a support garment of quite structured.
Well, in some ways, stays lasted for a very long time,
yeah,
didn't they?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, they must
and
have.
And the sort of version of that, I think. Of course, the silhouette changes and it's changed a lot by the end of the century. But generally speaking, I suppose in the 1920s, that was maybe when women were a bit freer. But certainly, some people were in corsets until quite recently.
And her hair, Ali is forced to wear a wig in 1851. And again, that's incredibly itchy. That that causes real discomfort.
Yes, she loves the idea of having a profusion of hair. But of course, she realises she shouldn't think too much about the provenance of the hair because it's probably...
Well, that's it. It's probably come from a poor woman, hasn't
probably
it?
Probably has from a poor woman or a poor dead woman. So she tries not to think about that. But she does quite like having, you know, a glamorous wig. Who wouldn't really? But underneath is her own hair, her own sort of bright red, sort of fire engine red hair. So that's an added discomfort. And there's a bit where she gets a headache. And it made me think about, what did you do? What did you do when you couldn't just have a Nurofen or...
Do you know, that's exactly what I was thinking. There's really very little about living in 1851 that appealed. Yes, it was a time of great discovery and the Great Exhibition does sound remarkable. I would like to have gone. I would have gone if I'd been around.
Yes,
I think.
Yes, me too.
But the idea of a baking hot day, an itchy corset, and one of those heads you get in the summer, and having nowhere to turn.
No, it doesn't really appeal to me, I have to say. Yes, time of inventions and excitements, and I can see that, of course. I'd love to see lots of horses around, because I love horses, but of course some of them are very badly treated, so that would be awful. So I can't think, apart from horses and nice clothes, much really to recommend it. And in the heat, I just think it must have been awful. But she does put a cloth with vinegar on it over her eyes, which is meant to...
I was going to try that next time I have one of my heads.
Me too.
I'll just do it Victorian style-y and I'll lie down and put a damp cloth with vinegar.
Yes.
Across your forehead.
Let me know how that goes and get someone to bring you tea.
You'll be delighted to know that I will let you know.
Please
how it
do.
Goes. There was something else I wanted to ask you about. Again, something else I'd never heard of, but I live in a relatively old house. I think I've determined that it was built 1913, something like that. So that would make it Edwardian?
Yes, yeah.
Just about, might be a bit older than that. And sometimes I do think about the people who've lived there before, and I went to the National Archives, and you don't even need to go there to do it. There's a website where you can find out who's lived in your house. And I found the list of people who'd lived in my house during the Second World War, and it's really... It does something to you.
It really does.
It really does, doesn't it? Yeah. So in the book, you do discuss something called stone tape theory. Now, what is this?
It's the idea, and it's just a theory, really, but it's an idea that buildings can retain a memory, that there is a memory within stone or within brick or within walls. And I think it's very tempting to believe in that. In fact, in the third book, which I'm writing now, Ali does go back to the Second World War because she lives in the East End of London, and her house was still standing, she finds out, in 1851. And, of course, during the Second World War, you have the terrible London Blitz, and the East End suffered terribly, so Ali's going to find herself in the midst of that. So yeah, there is a theory that buildings retain memory. And again, I have no answers, only questions. But we've all been to places, haven't we, that feel like they have an odd atmosphere.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Or also places that we feel we've lived in before. And there's no real answer to that, I don't think.
Well, Ali, when she goes back in time and visits her house, because she couldn't live in a new build, Ali, could she? The stories just wouldn't work if she did. She does live in an older London house. And so she knocks on the door in 1851, and then she knocks on a neighbour's door, and it's opened by somebody that she does recognise.
Yes, because her neighbours have already told her. And Ali moves in the first book, she moves to this house, which is in the East End, and I wanted that to be really central to all the books, really. And as the books go on, you're going to find out a bit more about all her neighbours. Yes, but her neighbour, I think two doors on, Irene Goldman, says that her family have lived there for generations. Yeah. So when the door opens, it's Irene's great-great-grandmother standing there with a shawl round her shoulders.
I'm getting all quite shivery. So when we do see people that we think we know, it might simply be that in a previous life we met their great-great-great-granddad.
It could be, and I think Joan says that at one point in the book, that these could be time travellers all around us. Who knows?
Have you lived before?
I don't know that I have, really. I don't have... I know some people do have sort of strong past life memories. I don't really. I think I'm a new soul, like Dina in the book.
New soul, okay. Now, last week I talked to a writer who was incredibly nervous, Jenny Godfrey, about the release of her second book.
I listened to that. It was
lovely. The Barbecue at Number 9. She was so worried. You're already in the top 10 with this book, but do you have those moments pre-publication? Because every book you've written has been a success.
Oh.
But it has. I mean, and I really do mean it. You do bring a lot of pleasure to people. But do you have a slight fluttery tummy?
Definitely. And I've got to say that Barbecue at Number 9 or 11, I can't remember which, Jenny's new book is amazing. And it did make the top 10. So she should be so happy with that and the reception it received. I'm still worried with everyone. And do you know, it gets a little bit worse stress, I think, with each book, particularly The Frozen People, was very nerve-wracking because it was something new. As you said, there were 15 Ruth books. I'd said that book 15 was going to be the last. I've still only said last for now.
Yeah, but you've been a bit cagey about that.
But I have been a bit cagey about that. But I knew some people were sad about that, and I wanted them to really love Ali and the new series. So I was really happy that it was well-received. And then book two is always a big test of any series, really. So this one was huge fun to write, but that doesn't always mean that people are going to have huge fun reading it. So I really hope that people do.
Ellie Griffiths, and the second in her Ali Dawson detective novels with a bit of time travelling thrown in, is called The Killing Time. It is good, honestly. I think you probably should start with The Frozen People, which is the first one, but The Killing Time is a great sequel. Nicholas says, I met Ellie on a boat in the middle of the Atlantic last year. She was great. This whole time travel thing works if you don't make a big hoo-ha about it. After all, we all accepted Mr. Ben could travel in time and place simply by stepping through a changing room curtain. It worked every time. Thank you for that memory. I was always a bit unnerved by Mr. Ben, but I know he had his fans. Ellie Griffiths is a great writer, and I'm certainly going to look forward to the third book in that series, set in the Second World War. And if you think you have experienced stone tape theory, that you've lived in a house that has got memories embedded in it, please do email the off-air podcast. We'd love to hear from you. janeandfee@times.radio. It is 3:30 to 4.
How I Made It on Times Radio with Sky Business Mobile. Join Ed Vasey and Associate Business Editor of the Sunday Times, Hannah Privett, every Friday morning as they capture the human stories behind the entrepreneurs who have built their businesses from startup to startling success. How I Made It, every Friday morning with Ed Vasey on Times Radio with Sky Business Mobile. Only Sky Business Mobile rolls over unused data and automatically shares it with your team. See skybusiness.com for T's and C's and verification.
Listen to Times Radio on your smart speaker. Just say, play Times Radio.
Step out of your ordinary and discover something new on a Cunard voyage from Hayes Travel. Book selected 2026 and 2027 voyages before the 2nd of March and enjoy 10% off. That's 10% off the Norwegian fjords, transatlantic crossings, Europe, the Caribbean and more. This offer must end March the 2nd, so book your Cunard voyage with a low deposit at Hayes Travel today. Conditions apply. Atoll protected.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
And my thanks to Melanie, working in the tourist office in Swansea. She says, yes, you can still get a great ice cream at either Joe's or Verdi's. They're both still there. I think they're both in Mumbles, aren't they? It is lovely. And David says, I think his tongue is in his cheek, but I'm not absolutely certain. Thank you for patronising Swansea. Stroke Abattoir. We, the simple folk of Wales, doff our caps to you, ivory tower dwellers in London. That's Dave, who's in Wales. David, thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed for listening. We appreciate it. Even if we're annoying you, you still count as a listener. So it all works as far as we're concerned. Once again, our apologies here at Times Radio for playing an old version of a song this afternoon that did contain an offensive term. We are very, very sorry about that. Tomorrow, our big guest is Ian Russell, the father of Molly Russell. He does a lot of very important campaigning around social media and young people. And Ian will be with us at around 3:30 tomorrow afternoon here on Times Radio. John Pienaar is next. He'll guide you through the early part of the evening. And amongst his guests today are the former Transport Secretary, Louise Haig, now quite an outspoken Labour backbencher. So that'll be interesting. She's talking to John this afternoon. My producer today was Hugo Chambray, and our technical operator was Ryan Boyden. Have a very good evening. Back tomorrow at 2.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Jane. It's 4 o'clock and I'm John Pienaar, here with Times Radio Drive, and here are the headlines. It has emerged that Peter Mandelson was arrested by police after the Commons Speaker warned detectives that the former Cabinet Minister was potentially planning to flee the country. And Reform UK's candidate in tomorrow's Gorson and Denton by-election won't be fined for breaching rules on campaigning material. Coming up, we're going to go to Westminster, talking to Times Radio's political editor, Anna Mihailova, and we're going to go live to Gorton and Denton by-election seat with our reporter on the ground there, and I'll be talking to representatives of the parties who are battling out in the last few full days of campaigning.
This is Times Radio.
Now the news with James Kitchen.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. It's emerged that Peter Mandelson was arrested by police after the Commons Speaker warned detectives the former Cabinet Minister was potentially planning to flee the country. Addressing MPs earlier, Sir Lindsay Hoyle said he felt duty-bound to share what he'd been told during a visit to the British Virgin Islands.
I'd like to confirm that upon receipt of information that I felt it was relevant, I passed this on to the Metropolitan Police in good faith, as is my duty and responsibility.
Officers arrested Lord Mandelson hours later on Monday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. The former British ambassador to Washington has called claims he would leave the country baseless. The BBC Director General has told its complaints unit to carry out a fast-tracked investigation into what he calls the serious mistake made during Sunday's BAFTA programme. Tourette's campaigner John Davidson shouted out a racist slur while black actors Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo were on stage presenting an award. The broadcaster failed to edit out the moment from its coverage. Energy bills are to drop by £10 a month for an average household from April. The regulator Ofgem says the 7% fall in the price cap follows the government scrapping an energy efficiency scheme at the last budget. The Conservatives claim the drop's been achieved by sleight of hand, shifting green levies onto tax. Head of policy for the charity National Energy Action, Matt Copeland, says more needs to be done.
£120 has to be said to be something that is material for people, and it will help people afford their bills. But the reality is that it won't go all the way, and we've got millions of households who will still struggle to pay it. So on the one hand, it is a lot of money and it will make a lot of difference to people. On the other hand, it won't make enough difference to enough people to eliminate fuel poverty, and that's what we're all trying to do.
The government said there is no pause in its Chagos Islands deal, despite a minister earlier telling MPs the UK was pausing the handover of control of the territory to Mauritius. The mixed messaging comes after Donald Trump urged Sir Keir Starmer to scrap the agreement last week, despite earlier expressing support for the treaty. The deal would see Britain cede sovereignty of the islands to Mauritius and pay £100 million a year to lease back the Diego Garcia military base. Councils in England collected less money in fines from fly tipping last year, despite dealing with more incidents. Official figures show reported cases were up 9%, but the value of court penalties decreased by £57,000. Campaigners are demanding tougher enforcement rules, with many residents in rural areas saying they're stepping up when local authorities don't. Rachel Hallos is from the National Farmers Union.
The reality is that there's so many unreported incidents as well. So fly tipping really is the blight of the countryside, whether it's farmers' fields, the centre of little villages. We as farmers, I'm a farmer too, have to bear the responsibility of removing these items.
For the first time in more than 2 weeks, migrants have arrived in the UK after crossing the English Channel. Pictures from the PA news agency show people stepping off a Border Force vessel in Ramsgate in Kent. So far this month, 597 migrants have made the journey across the stretch of water. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app and via your smart speaker.
John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive with ServiceNow.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. The story of Peter Mandelson keeps growing, keeps spreading. Now, the Speaker of the Commons has rather dramatically admitted that he was the one who set the police on Mandelson ahead of his arrest on Monday. Lindsay Hoyle told officers that Mandelson was planning to fly to the British Virgin Islands, so they arrested him before he could get away. Just doing my duty, the Speaker told MPs, but it was more than enough to stoke the fire under the Mandelson story. And I will have the latest on that for you in just a moment. But I'll also get you more on how police investigating Lord Mandelson for abuse of public office are getting more heat themselves than we've seen in quite a long while. The Met is trying to keep government files on Mandelson under wraps, including papers on his recruitment as ambassador to the United States, which, of course, was before he even got to Washington and had the chance to leak inside government information to the convicted billionaire Jeffrey Epstein. So how could those records possibly prejudice the investigation into Ambassador Mandelson sending Epstein market-sensitive info much later? And here's another question. Keir Starmer says that he wants these records released so we can all see how Mandelson lied his way into the ambassador's job. But we can't see them. So how do we know if Starmer and his team even asked the right questions and enough questions about Mandelson's friendship with Jeffrey Epstein? Ultimately, it's up to the government and the Westminster Committee in charge of releasing the Mandelson files, what is released and what is kept under wraps, not the police. So forget who's facing most embarrassment. For a moment, what about the public's right to know? Just asking. Wonder what you think. Send me a text, 87222. Start with the word Times. Or a tweet to @TimesRadio. And a little later on the programme, Donald Trump addressed Congress, America and the world on Capitol Hill last night. An hour and 50 minutes of achievements proclaimed and lies told. But is Trumpism now colliding with hard reality at home and around the world? And it's the last full day of campaigning in the Gorton and Denton by-election, vitally important for Reform UK, the Greens and most of all Labour. Anyone know what's about to happen? Anyone? Well, let's talk about it. First thing, Mandelson. Peter Mandelson made headlines, didn't he, after his arrest on Monday when he complained someone had told police he was about to fly off to the Virgin Islands. And they'd acted the police to stop him getting away from their investigation. Something, of course, he denied ever planning to do. And then, earlier, in the Commons, the Speaker, Lindsay Hoyle, stood up.
To prevent any inaccurate speculation, I'd like to confirm that upon receipt of information that I felt it was relevant, I passed this on to the Metropolitan Police in good faith, as is my duty and responsibility. It is regrettable this rapidly ended in the media.
And then he sat down again. So Anna Mikhailova, our political editor at Times Radio, joins us now. Anna, welcome.
Hi, John.
So, like a brief statement from the Speaker, but it was a dramatic moment.
It was such a dramatic moment. It came a few moments for PMQs about half an hour before. And it's a thing that has everyone talking since. This twist of this story about Peter Mandelson's arrest is absolutely extraordinary. Everything about it, from the fact that initially Peter Mandelson messaged a journalist at 4 a.m. after leaving police custody, saying that he believed the Lord Speaker had given this information, and obviously Peter Mandelson immediately denied it, that he was a flight risk. Then the Lord Speaker came out and said that this was entirely false and without foundation. So then there was this moment of